Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, and saging, or positive aging. I am passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. So that's really kind of the purpose of this series, is to help people make that time and be intentional about moving on to what's next. Today, I am interviewing Wendy Lustbader. Wendy is the author of several books that have earned her a national reputation in the field of aging. She is also a popular speaker at conferences throughout the United States and Canada, using storytelling to animate complex subjects. Additionally, she is a skilled psychotherapist, having worked almost 20 years with people from all walks of life at a community clinic in downtown Seattle. Currently, she is an affiliate associate professor at the University of Washington School of Social Work in Seattle. Wendy's first book was co-authored with Nancy Hoyman, Taking Care of Aging Family Members. Her second book, Counting on Kindness, helps readers to comprehend the complex feelings that arise when we become dependent on others for help. Her latest books are What's Worth Knowing, a collection of insights gathered from older people, and Life Gets Better, which explores how life improves as we get older on every level except the physical. For more information on Wendy, please refer to the bio attached to this podcast. And I will say that I have all of her books, and I use them in various ways in workshops. Sometimes I start with a reading. So they're very helpful. So welcome to the series, Wendy.
Thank you so much.
I first met Wendy at the Saging International Conference, which takes place every 2 years. This year it's going to be in Minneapolis in October. I recommend this conference for anyone who's interested in continuing to learn and grow. So now we have the questions. Wendy, in what ways do you see life getting better as we get older? In your book, Life Gets Better, you argue there are gains in every dimension except the physical. So in what ways does life get better?
Well, you know, I think we're so indoctrinated by the society where we think, you know, when we're young, those are the best years of our lives. But really the best years of our lives are in later life. And if we ignore for a moment the problems of the body, because what happens is the older you get, the more you know who you are. You know, and the older you get, the more you know what's important in life, and there's a lot of talk about that, so it's almost trivialized, but it's a very deep truth. To know what's important means every day of your life you're able to turn away from what really is trivia and rise above things that you might have gotten tangled up with when you were younger. So there's a broadly spiritual dimension, which means that every day that you live, you're very aware of the passage of time and how precious friendship and love is. And boy, by the time you're in your 60s, I'm in my mid-60s now, you are really, you're living with more aliveness, more generosity. It's a beautiful thing to get older. We're lucky when we get to live to be older.
Uh-huh. Oh, I love that. Well, what, tell us, I mean, I think we can make assumptions, but what about the physical challenges? And are there any positives in this area? Because that is something you hear. I mean, my parents are both 93. And so they live a mile from me now. So they're in a retirement home. So, you know, I'm around a lot of people with physical challenges. So talk about that, please.
Yeah, we could talk about the negatives and difficulties for 4 hours straight without stopping.
Right.
What's really interesting is to try to see the positives in physical limitations. So I'll tell you about a friend of mine I'm about to visit who's 94. And what's happened, because she lost her balance and now she's on a walker and can only walk slowly, she goes out every day to get her mail and sees every flower, every bud in the tree, every bird, to take a walk with her is to be in a world of magnificence. And it's not to say she wasn't sensitive to nature earlier, but she was a busy professional, and she had plenty of things to do all day and didn't have time for that kind of walk.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, it's not just no longer being gainfully employed, but rather it's her disability, her inability to just do a task, one, two, three, that's made her learn to just see the beauty of the day in front of her. So I think one of the biggest assets in limitation is, as your world gets more constrained, you have to make the most of it, make the best of it.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give one other example that I've never forgotten was a woman who got very depressed because she was losing her eyesight from macular degeneration. So she wasn't going completely blind, but she was losing central vision. And day after day, she got sadder and sadder because she couldn't read, and she couldn't even read the recipe on the back of a package. And one day, this is in Seattle, she wakes up, and it was one of the gleaming sunny days we occasionally get in Seattle. And because her nature of her eye issue was central vision, but she could still see light and will always be able to see light. And when she woke up to the splendorous day, she realized that it was just so wonderful to be alive and that she would always be able to enjoy the beauty of beautiful light and color. And from that day forward, the depression left her, and she celebrated light and she celebrated color. And I just, that went right into my heart. I
uh-huh.
just thought, wow, what an example.
Perfect. You know, that is moving. Wow. The time of life eventually comes when we need to count on the kindness of others, which is what you explore in your book, Counting on Kindness. You say in the book that giving care is easier than being on the receiving end. Do you have any tips for moving through the difficulty of accepting help? Or even talking about kindness a little bit? I think that's...
Yes. Well, accepting help is just so difficult, especially in a culture that values independence with such a passion, which we do in the United States. Not all cultures value independence to the degree that we do, but that's what's going on. And another thing is we always are celebrating the caregivers, and we should, and I do every day. But what's the hardest is to be the one who's dependent and has to wait and has to worry, am I using up somebody's goodwill? So I want to say that it's really interesting in Jewish culture and Japanese culture, two very different old cultures, both have the insight that, I'll do the Jewish one first, that if I allow you, Jan, to take out my garbage for me because I can't lift the garbage pail with my cane at the same time, I'm allowing you to do a mitzvah for me. Mitzvah means good act. And therefore, my being dependent on you, my allowing you to do this for me, gives you this great honor of getting to do a good act. And the one who does the mitzvah feels really good about it. And so it kind of makes us pay more attention to how the person who is dependent is actually giving the gift of letting themselves be helped. And in Japanese culture, there's about 20 different words to say thank you. I can't pronounce any of them, but basically when a storekeeper has somebody come in and buy something, the merchant will say in Japanese something like, thank you very much for coming in. Without you, I wouldn't earn a living. So it's the one who allows someone to help them, so there's a debt that's created in a sense. So you allow someone to put you in debt to them. So it's really a beautiful turning on its heels what we think in sort of American culture. So all of that is to say that when you are dependent on other people for help, it if you have that lens that you're conferring an honor and keep your dignity and make sure that your dignity is preserved by the helper. So one thing someone indebted to others can do is always be very good with saying thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you so much for taking out my garbage. And it's amazing how it strengthens you to realize you, in your own way, are a giver. I hope that made some sense.
No, it did. You know, and it's so
complicated.
Well, it is, and it's such a shift in thinking that how could we get that message out to the broad? I mean, how could we really educate people to understand this?
Because when I wrote Counting on Kindness, it was 3 years I worked on just 200 pages, and I was giving voice to people who are in the dependent position, and that's why the book means a great deal to me, because it's how it feels to be on the receiving end. That was a very hard job to try to articulate it.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's excellent. In your first book, Taking Care of Older Family Members, which I'm kind of doing right now, you and Nancy Hoyman urge caregivers to take good care of themselves in order to take good care of others. Can you tell me more about that? How do we do that?
Well, if you don't take care of yourself as a caregiver, you get exhausted. And you start, both people actually, the care receiver and the one giving care, get sick of each other. And it has nothing to do with how much you love each other or like each other. It's just that it's difficult day after day after day. So I say to caregivers, it's so important to take a Sabbath, take a day away, a psychological Sabbath, where you, one day has to be different from all the rest, and you, one man, I urged him, you know, to go back to church. He wasn't being with his faith community anymore, where he used to derive so much meaning and social contact. His wife had dementia, and he would bring her to church, and she would start singing the Star Spangled Banner instead of the hymn, and so he became isolated with her. And I said, you should let another family member hang out with your wife, and you go to your faith community and surround yourself with another aspect of life, and you'll come back refreshed. And the most important aspect of that is, you know, after he started going to church again, he was able to treasure his time with his wife more.
Uh-huh.
So that's the way it works. You take good care of yourself in order to take good care of the other.
Right.
That's the secret.
Yeah. And that is, I can definitely see where that is true, for sure. It is just, it's exhausting. And even if you're not doing a lot, it's just, for me, I find that I'm weighted down with, I'm thinking about it all the time. Like I should be over there and I'm not there. Or
exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, in your book, What's Worth Knowing, your collection of life lessons elders had taught you as a younger woman, can you cite some of the lessons that most influenced your life? That sounds like fascinating. I mean, I have the book, but just the process, I think, would be fascinating.
Well, actually, I've kept a journal since fifth grade, a little diary then, and later became a journal. And a New York City editor asked me if I could write down what older people had taught me, I realized that the wisdoms and ideas and thoughts that I got from elders that I wrote in my journal would probably be the best ones. But when I sat down to work on the book, I realized, wait a minute, even better, what are the things that have stayed in my heart where I don't even have to look at my journals? What have I started to live by? And that's how I recorded What's Worth Knowing. So I have the book in front of me, and I want to read one of the ones that means the most to me. And I was shocked that the publisher put it on the back of the book, because I didn't tell them this is one of the ones that means the most to me. But somebody must have felt the same way.
Wow.
Is it okay if I read
yes,
this?
Yes, please do. Please do. Because the one thing that you are a great storyteller, that is for sure. I learned that. Well, I learned that at the conference. And so, no, please, that'd be great.
Well, this is in his voice. What I did is I tried to recreate sort of the voice and syntax of the person. And this is Bill Milton, age 89. He said, "There's two kinds of people, the ones who live hard and the ones who take it easy. The hard livers are tough on themselves. They take chances. They never stay comfortable for too long. The easy livers play it safe. They never push themselves. One year runs into the next because the years are all basically the same. To youngsters, I say, live hard. This is your one and only life, the only show in town. You can't get any of your days back. Live as if you're going to be old someday, looking back on everything you did. It's everything you didn't do that will bug the heck out of you." So after this guy told me this, I booked a trip to Bali, Indonesia. I just didn't have the money and didn't have the time, but I said, whoa, everything I don't do will bug the heck out of me. So elders have taught me how to live in terms of, this sounds gloomy, but it's the opposite, how to live in terms of the end of life starting when you're younger.
Yep.
Because it makes everything precious while you can still do something about making a rich life. So let's see, I put a bookmark in because I wanted to read one more, if that's okay,
yes.
If we still have the time.
Oh, we do. We do.
So this is a fellow, I love to honor him. That first one was a made-up name. I was protecting privacy because I couldn't get his permission because he had died.
Oh, okay.
And I just wanted to use real names only if I had permission. And this one, I had permission. This is John Coughlin, his real name, a wonderful man. And when he was literally on his deathbed, I was just so sad. And he said, "Don't be so sad." And he said, "Let me tell you something." And here's what I wrote down. Good fortune in life is having good friends. Here's his wording. Your family is stuck with you. After you get married, your wife is stuck with you too. But friends are free to come and go. The ones who stay by your side become your treasures. They just plain like you. I'm proud of certain things I've done in my life, certain accomplishments, but look at my friends. You can't just go out and acquire them. You make them. Years go by. You go through hard times together. It takes some doing. I look around and I see how lucky I am to have such fine people in my life. And there we were, arrayed around his hospital bed, loving him. And I'm not going to take time now and tell you all of his worldly accomplishments, which were many, including
wow.
arguing before the Supreme Court. This very accomplished man in affairs of the world said his greatest good fortune was his friends.
That's wonderful.
And I have paid even more attention to my friendships ever since hearing his words and realizing that's our true bounty. So I think elders have plenty to tell us about life.
Yes. And those stories were from your book, What's Worth Knowing.
Right.
Yeah. Excellent. Love that. Because I'm going to go back to my office and look those up so I don't forget those. Those are excellent.
Well, some people start their staff meetings. I heard they read one of the elders. And then they start their staff meetings. I think that's really funny. Just to get everybody centered on what's important instead of kind of the pettiness we can get into.
I think that's an excellent idea. And the other thing I was thinking about as you were reading this story is Richard Leiter, in his work, he has found
yeah.
that one of the things when elders reflect, one of the things they often say is the risks, they wish they had taken more risks.
Yes.
You know.
Because if you live in a very safe box, yeah, you can have a nice, secure life. But it really is true that as we approach the ending, whatever age it is that we have to do that, we begin to think about the things that Jung called unlived life. And unlived life is some potentials inside of us that we did not explore. And I always like to say it's never too late, as long as you don't focus solely on, well, I should have climbed Mount Rainier.
Right.
I'm not talking about in the external world, but in the internal world, it's always available to you. So I've known people that never said the words, I love you. They just weren't brought up to say those words. As they were getting near the end of their lives, they began a practice of trying to make themselves be more tender and more verbally demonstrative and more physically demonstrative. And they shocked their adult children. You know, all of a sudden their dad was saying, I love you. But I think when we're younger, we adopt society's prejudice and we do not realize how much change is possible and that change actually can hasten as we get older. So older people are interested in taking care of that which maybe they didn't take care of earlier.
Right. That's excellent. Well, we're kind of coming to kind of a close here, and I like to close with the question, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know?
That's a very good question.
That we could talk for a long time, but just like off the top of your head, if you had to say, you know, these are some key points that people really like, and actually all your statements have been very good here.
I just want to say that when I'm on an airplane and there's turbulence and it feels like this might be my time, it's the thing I always think about is Counting on Kindness, that little tiny book that because I've gotten letters from people saying that more than anything else, it helped them understand what was going on between them and a loved one. So surprisingly, the people that write me the letters are the caregivers of somebody, and they say that it made them more kind and it made them more understanding. And so when you are a writer, the greatest thing in your life as a writer is to know that your words made life better for people.
Right.
So that's where I seem to go, and I think I'm at my ending, is that my life as a writer has reached people. So that's what I would like to say.
Oh, excellent. Well, Wendy, thank you. You've given us much to think about on learning how to make the rest of life the best of life. And it's a very optimistic, realistic of perspective on growing in wisdom.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.